part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm here doing part.
So shall we begin our chat, sir?
Sure. Yeah. Do you play it like just kind of loose or?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a conversation. That's pretty much it. Yeah. It's loosey goosey. It's not like 20 questions. I don't really have anything like written down or, you know, I mean, obviously I've read your book, which I loved. I very much enjoyed this morning. Sat down to read it. So I should say that the book is called Bigsby Grant, Private Eye, Fangs and Brimstone. And your name is Patrick Coyle, correct?
Correct. That is correct.
Got all the pronunciations right?
That's perfect.
All right. We're off to a good start. My name is Christian Horn, and this is another episode of the Part-Time Fanboy. As you've heard, I have a very special guest on the line, Patrick Coyle. Bigsby Grant, Private Eye, Fangs and Brimstone. Issue number one is what I have on my tablet right now. And this is a Kickstarter, correct?
It is, yeah. It starts on Tuesday, October 17th.
Nice, nice. So either this will be on the day of launch, this interview, or like a day or two. Usually I try to hit like Tuesday or Thursday. It's never a regular schedule. It is called Part-Time Fanboy for a reason.
Right.
More than likely Wednesday or Thursday. But either way, if you are listening to this, the Kickstarter is up, and I would imagine you can just go to kickstarter.com and search Bigsby Grant, and it will pop up, correct?
That's correct. You can also go to bigsbygrant.com.
Nice.
bigsbygrant.com, and it'll take you to our website, which will direct you there as well.
Nice, nice. Very cool. Very cool. So do you want to just start off? I already started by saying it's a Kickstarter because we do want money. First of all, this book was perfect for like the season that we're in. Like that, it's great. Like I sat down to read it. And one of the things that we do like every October is we usually talk about horror movies and stuff. But because of the SAG after strike and stuff like that, we're kind of prevented from chatting about Shruck movies because I am a SAG member. So so it's great to come across a book that is takes advantage of the season, I should say.
Well, that's the hope, right? Is we did one last year, a year ago at this time as well.
Okay.
I mean, for those of you who don't know out there in podcast land, this is Bigsby Grant is a mummy who is a private eye, and he lives in a city that's filled with monsters and ghouls and ghosts and witches and warlocks. So I thought that October is like the perfect time to put this book out. It's when people are kind of looking for this kind of thing as it appeals to you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I loved it. I mean, I'm a big fan of horror and stuff. And this kind of reminded me a little bit of like Scooby-Doo a little bit, like that sort of flavor, and a little bit of like Love and Rockets in there, like just with the style of it. And so I very much like enjoyed sitting down to this and like reading it, because there's a lot of times where I can't find stuff that I haven't already read that is, you know, themed for the season. So thank you very much for, you know, sharing this with me.
Absolutely. Yeah. My pleasure. We put out one, like I said, about a year ago, that was more of a, kind of, you know, horror/noir Private Eye story.
Oh, okay.
It was a one and done, 80-page graphic novel.
Oh, okay.
But this time around, the issue that you read is number one of a 6-issue series. It's going to have more of a kind of buddy action vibe to it, but still in the same, you know, kind of horror, light horror wrapper.
Yeah. Oh, well, so this is not Bigsby Grant's first like appearance, like in on Kickstarter.
It is correct. Yes. So we did the first one.
Gotcha.
October of last year, and then we'll be doing another one in the spring, you know, for issue two of this current series.
So one of the first things I was kind of like taken by was the name, right? Bigsby Grant. Well, Bigsby reminds me of Bill Bigsby. I'm old.
Sure. No, me too.
that did you name him after Bill Bigsby at all, or like was it, or is it something else?
I'm sure Bill Bixby was in the back of my brain because I am also, I grew up, you know, in the late 70s, early 80s as well.
Same here.
So, but I actually pulled it from Bix Beiderbecke, who was a jazz musician from the 50s, 40s, maybe.
Okay.
Back when I was first came up with the idea for Bixby Grant, which was, geez, almost 30 years ago. I was at the time really into noir detective movies, like the old ones.
Sure.
Philip Marlowe and that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
and then I was also
starting
to get into jazz. So I will always love that name, Bix. And I looked it up, and Bixby is the quote unquote full name. Bix is short for Bixby. And it just kind of stuck. I really liked it. And then initially the vampire who's in this book named Diego, his name was originally Dizzy after Dizzy Gillespie.
Oh, nice.
Another jazz musician, but I ended up changing him. So he has Mexican heritage. And so I changed his name to Diego.
Nice. Nice. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. So you're a jazz lover as well. I mean, I love jazz, but I am not well versed in like the history or the people. Like I listen to the jazz stations or like on Pandora. Yes, I'm old. Pandora or Spotify. I'll just pull up like jazz, and as long as it's not kind of like Kenny G, I'm okay. For the most part,
right.
I love the old stuff. So there you go. Like, yeah, that's awesome. We have something in common. That's great. I mean, Bixby was the first thing that stood out to me, but like when I got like, you know, all the PR stuff, you know, from Don't Hide PR, which is, you know, the firm that kind of contacted me about this.
Sure. Shout out to Melissa.
Yeah. Melissa's the best, like totally awesome. I love to say, I don't want to say her last name because I always screw up last name, but Melissa from Don't Hide PR. Yes. We're giving you a shout out. But the thing that struck me is that when I sat down to read it, I was like, oh, I didn't know this was a Halloween thing. Like, you know, I went in blind. So can you talk to me a little bit about, like, I mean, you've got the, you know, Private Eye, Fangs and Brimstone, but if anyone who's approaching it, Bixby Grant, like they don't know what they're going into, were there any sort of like concerns about, or are there sort of like, have you heard that from anyone else? Like, oh, I didn't know what I was going into, or are they seeing the visuals first before they, am I making sense with my question?
Yeah. Yeah. No, totally.
Yeah.
I haven't heard anybody who's gone into it cold be like, oh, I didn't, this isn't what I expected, like in a negative way.
Yeah, no, no, no.
Yeah, but when I've done shows this year, this is my first real year in a long time doing shows and pimping the book.
Sure.
People are either in or out right away based on
really?
The visual. Yes. Like it's very strange. And people who have manned the booth with me have noticed this as well. People just like show up at the booth and they're like, tell me more.
Or
I want this book. I'm like, okay, you don't know anything about it, but okay. And it's based on the fact that it's a guy, you know, bandaged up with a 45 and a fedora, and it just feels kind of pulpy, but kind of monstery at the same time. And so it's got a little bit, you know, some of the posters have werewolves on them or a Wendigo on them, and people are just like drawn to that.
Yeah, yeah.
It helps that I've got great artists. Gonzalo Martinez is the one who does the interior art. He also does one of the covers.
Yeah.
I was very lucky with this issue that's coming out in October this year to get Gabriel Hardman. I don't know. Are you familiar with Gabriel's work at all?
No, not off the top of my brain, but maybe I've seen it. You know, I sometimes recognize things visually. So yeah.
Okay. You probably have. He did Agents of Atlas for Marvel many years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he did a bunch of work for DC. He did Green Lantern Earth One, where he wrote and direct and drew two graphic novels for them, which are both beautiful. They're basically Elseworlds stories. And then he's also done a bunch of independent comics. So he did his own called Invisible Republic, which I think came out through Image for many years.
Okay.
He and his wife did the Planet of the Apes books for many years.
Oh, nice.
One of my favorite things about Gabriel, and he's super talented. He's a writer. He's an artist. He's an artist's artist, frankly. But he is a storyboard artist, is his quote unquote day job.
Oh, nice.
And he worked on Dark Knight Returns. He worked on, he worked on The Dark Knight. He worked on Logan. He worked on the latest Indiana Jones movie. Like, he's just got super good street cred with geek cinema. So, and then the other great cover that I've got this time around is from Liana Kangas. I don't know if you're familiar with her work, but she does a lot of work on She's done some work for on the Star Wars covers. She's done quite a bit of Star Trek covers. She does a lot of indie work, but she also put out her own book this year called True Cult, which I think they're having a party for tonight at New York City Comic Con.
Oh, nice.
So I was lucky to get her to do one of the variant covers, which I don't know if that was in the book that you read, but it's the Zombie Town variant.
Zombie Town, yeah, the sort of multicolored cover.
Exactly.
With her holding the revolver. Yeah. Zombie Town is something I want to get to too, because I was like, zombies. Yeah. Zombies are like my favorite. They're like my favorite thing.
There
like,
you go.
I mean, I love all horror and stuff like that. But like when I saw Zombie Town, and that's sort of like the backup feature for this book, right?
It is.
And when I got to it, I loved the art style. I mean, I love the art of the whole thing. I mean, it was very different and interesting. And I was just like, oh, and a contrast from like what the book opened with. So like very well done, sir.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I wanted to get a little variation in there. I love what Gonzalo Martinez has done. We collaborated on the first book. He's going to be the artist on this series moving forward. For the backup, I wanted to try something a little bit different. It does take place in the same world. The fictional city that Bixby Grant lives in is called Harbor City. And it's like Metropolis was back in the 30s, in that we never really define where in the United States it is. But it's, you know, I think of it as kind of like Cleveland or something in the Midwest somewhere.
And then
for the backup story, I took a minor character from the first story, Ramirez. Sorry, I can't keep my character straight.
No, it's totally fine.
Mari Ramirez is a police detective, and so she's the protagonist of the backup story.
Yeah.
For zombie lovers, there is a section. You know how New York City, for instance, has different neighborhoods. There's like Soho, and then there's the Upper East Side, and then there's Hell's Kitchen. So there's a section of Harbor City called Zombie Town. And about 30 years ago, there was a zombie outbreak there. And rather than deal with it, they just kind of walled it off. so there's like a 5-square block section of Harbor Town that is just zombies. And nobody lives there. You know, it's all completely dark. All the buildings are run down. You know, it looks like a zombie movie in there.
Sure.
And I basically just wanted an excuse to have, you know, my characters go into a zombie outbreak whenever I wanted to.
That's awesome. I love it. I mean, everything in this book is great and totally up my alley. So like, it was a unique pleasure to just like open it up and be like, oh, look at this. I dig this. This is cool. So let's talk about Bixby Grant though, because he is the big name on the book.
Sure.
So one of the first things I love is like the design, right? Is like, I'm a big Doom Patrol fan. Like I love the Doom Patrol, and I'm not talking about like the new the Grant Morrison stuff is fine, but I love like the old characters, like I think the book might've been Showcase that it debuted. I should know more, being that I just said, I love the Doom Patrol, but, and so like when I opened it up, it reminded me of Negative Man, and he's wearing and I was like, this is cool. Like already you had me from the go. And you know, there's sort of like a young sort of like a punk rocker sort of dude he looks like he's in the 50s and he's got the striped shirt, and it has a very sort of like retro kind of vibe to it. And that's what I loved about it. I was like, this is great. Like just looking at the cover, I was like, oh, I'm in, like nothing to worry about here. And then, you know, just started reading the story and pleasantly surprised. Cause like you, I'm a fan of like old movies. I don't know that I would necessarily say noir, but I love Turner Classic Movies. When they were threatening to dismantle it this year, I was just like freaking out. Like,
oh, I seriously, was too.
Having anxiety, panic attacks. Like it's the only reason I still have, like we use YouTube TV now, but we used to have cable. Yeah. It's the only reason I held on to any of that stuff, but it's Turner Classic Movies. So let's tell the people about Bixby Grant. I mean, you mentioned that he's kind of like based on, he's like a noir detective, but he does look like a mummy. Let's go into stuff without spoilers. So what is his backstory or what is his deal?
So he was a police officer back in Prohibition, so in the 1920s.
Yeah.
And then through a confluence of events, he broke up a museum heist that had a natural history museum that had a mummy pharaoh exhibit on tour. And by accident, he triggered the curse of the pharaoh and became this living mummy. So now he's immortal. And he... he couldn't pass the police physical anymore, so he became a private detective instead.
Oh my God, that's great.
And then has lived, you know, over 100 years now and had many adventures. He fought in World War II. He had, you know, he's lived in every decade. So at some point, I hope to get to his, some of his different adventures throughout the last, you know, century. But we do a little bit of a flashback, as you could see in this issue, to find out about him before he became a mummy, just a little bit. We kind of scratched the surface on this issue. And so, yeah, so he's been a private eye. And now he's, now that he's older, he's a bit of a recluse and, you know, he's kind of depressed. I don't think he would ever admit that, but he likes to just kind of wallow in his own misery and hide away. And he doesn't like to take cases or be in the public eye anymore.
Yeah.
Everyone he's known or loved is dead or gone. So he's kind of, you know, shut himself off.
Yeah.
And he's basically a grumpy old man at this point, a really old man.
Yeah.
But he is immortal, and he can't be, you know, he could be stabbed, he could be shot, he can be torn apart. We're going to be exploring a little bit of that in over the course of the series too.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, so much of it is, I mean, this particular chapter, this first issue takes place on his birthday. And that's
right.
Just like a really great touch of like one of the big jokes I always, we, you know, my wife and I, we both had parents that died when we were little. So we're kind of plugged into this whole notion of, and we're always kind of like joking around, like not joking around. I mean, it's kind of morbid, but it's like, who's going to go first? Like you or me and stuff like, you know, it's just joking. And my wife is always like, no, you're the one that's going to outlive us all because you're the grumpiest. Like you're the one that's going to have to be like, and I was like, wouldn't it suck if I discovered like I was immortal and just couldn't die? And I'd be like, oh my God, like that sounds very dark and it is much darker than, but you know what I'm saying? Like, and so like,
totally.
When I opened up the first chapter of this book and it's like, today is my 123rd birthday. And he's like, and he hates the fact, obviously he's a mummy and he's wrapped in, you know, I don't know the mechanics of everything, but I just love the idea of like, he gets to really depressed on his birthday because he can't die, you know?
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Well, and there's actually, as in this issue, we find out that there was something pretty traumatic that happened on a particular birthday before he became a mummy as well. So not only is he reminded about how old he is, but there's also a very specific thing that I don't want to spoil. So the reason he even left the house is because it's his birthday and he just wants to distract himself from the fact that it's his birthday. So he takes every year on his birthday, he takes a crappy, you know, PI job just to kind of, you know, try and distract him a little bit.
Yeah.
And so that's how this story starts. And it should have been a very straightforward. He's investigating a haunted warehouse.
Yeah.
I'm not giving anything away here, but he's been hired to look into a possible haunting at a warehouse because the workers there won't go into the warehouse anymore and the owner's losing money. Right.
Yeah.
So he goes in there and then it's just one thing after another leads to a real big complication that he was not expecting to be reminded of his past.
Yeah.
So it plays directly into the reason that he was trying to forget his birthday, as well as just being a big pain in his butt.
That's great. That's great. And I love how you have sort of have the counterbalance with the vampire character, who's like the young sort of like kind of like Eddie Munster teenager type, like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
like
totally.
Eddie Munster was a character, a kid on the Munsters. If you're young, like this is all stuff that we were on TV, but like, love the sort of counterbalance of the, like, it's almost like a Batman and Robin sort of thing where it's like, you know, but this is less, they're not partners at all. They just run into each other and he's just like, no, you're not my partner. And Diego's like, no, come on, we can work together. Like, it was really, really well done. Counterbalance.
Thank you. Yeah. That was the idea, right? Is how do you, what's Bix's worst nightmare? It's somebody, you know, actively wanting to be with him all the time and hang out and talk and be interactive. And Bix just wants to be left the hell alone. So, Diego, I love the character. He was in the first graphic novel for like one page.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's a character that I created at about the same time as Bix, like 30 years ago. Back then, like I mentioned, he was called Dizzy and he wasn't a rockabilly. He was a punk.
Okay.
Minor things have tweaked over the years, but I do like that kind of dichotomy between the two of them, where he's even though he's immortal too, because he's a vampire, he still acts like a 21-year-old kid.
Yeah. It's totally great that he's got the, that was the thing is like, yeah, with the vampire, how long has he been a vampire? He's a kid. Like, how does it work right. in this world? Like there's just right. so many interesting things that you could explore. And yes. I don't think, like, it's funny. I love the fact that he's kind of a mummy, because a mummy is not a thing that really people like drift to, like, as far as like horror is concerned, you know, because no, sure. I mean, I've actually, that's something I need to watch this season. I've never watched the original Mummy or any of the Hammer like mummies, okay. because I guess yeah. to me, I was always just like, it's a thing and like, how scary could it be? Like, right. you know what I mean? Right. But this totally. Is a very kind of like unique take. And I love the sort of, you know, I don't want to spoil anything, but the mechanics of his physicality, like what he can do, like yeah. if he gets stuck or something like that, like you know, something falls on him or something like it, it's just very interesting.
Right.
The things that you've explored with the idea of being like a sentient, like mummy. Right.
Right. No, yeah. that's right. And when I came up with him, I don't know if you remember, do you remember the Great Lakes Avengers back in the
yeah, Mr. Immortal.
So that's exactly the John where Byrne this thing. Idea. This is where that came from.
So, oh, no way. That's great.
I was like, that's fun. His only superpower is that he can't die. Right. So like, he doesn't shoot lasers. He can't fly. He can't do anything else. He can just not die. Like he yeah. can fall off a building and then his bones snap back together. And they showed that a little bit he appeared in the She-Hulk series last year on Disney Plus, which I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah.
But at that time I was like, that'd be fun. What if, you know, I could have a character that was immortal and then he could get all shot up. That could be kind of fun. Or he could go into space or like do a bunch of things. And then I started thinking about it. And at the time I was watching a lot of old detective movies and I was like, well, what if he was a PI? And so I just started putting things together and I was like, okay, well, who else can't die? And so somehow I landed on the mummy and it just kind of felt right just because I didn't want him to be scary, but I wanted him to be more mysterious.
Sure.
And you know, a mummy can't be shot, can be shot, but not killed. So unless there's some sort of spell, so that possibly might be a storyline down the road as well. If somebody else can dig up, Bix, of course, has been looking for a way to undo this, curse
yeah.
and has not found it. So maybe somebody else will unlock that mystery for him down, in a future, adventure.
Sure. Sure. Well, that's always going back to Bill Bixby, the sad man walking down the road to like uncover that's the ongoing thing that just will never get solved. You know what
that's
I mean?
Right. That's yeah. right.
That's so yep. great. That's great. Are you a Doctor Who fan at all? Like, were you ever interested in any of that sort of thing?
I have tried Doctor Who and I just haven't been able to get into it. And okay, I feel like a bad geek because everyone I know is like, dude, you got to watch Doctor Who, and I've tried and it just doesn't click for me.
I'm a big Doctor Who fan, but there was a spinoff called Torchwood and the main character.
Oh, I've heard of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Jack Hart. And it's a bit more adult oriented like Torchwood,
yep.
but yep. there is a character in that who's immortal and okay. they did some very clever and effed up things with him. And I don't know if I should recommend it to you because you're like, no, I don't want to be influenced by anything else. But, yeah, Torchwood seems to be the thing that sometimes, like, if people couldn't get into Doctor who want more of, like, quote-unquote adult bent, but retaining kind of the silliness of it, seems to be and I think it's on Max, HBO Max,
okay.
but,
okay.
yeah, they've definitely done, and whenever somebody talks about immortality, I mean, I was a big fan of it, and I was just like, oh, yeah, no, it wouldn't be great. might not be the greatest thing, you know?
I don't think so. I mean, other authors have Anne Rice did that with the Interview with a Vampire a little bit. Like there's that kind of somber kind of emo thing about immortality that's been addressed in a couple of ways. I wanted to do something a little different with it. Like I changed it from emo to grumpy.
But
rather than just have them be like looking for solace or for the, I don't know what you would call it, but like, I just want to play him off of people like Diego or other people in the modern world. And we'll be playing a little bit with some of his kind of outdated motifs about women and about society and things of that nature. Like he's not, I don't want to get into politics with him at all.
Sure.
But like some of the out like he'll still call people, you know, call women broads, just because he's
he's
from the 1930s.
Sure.
And then people will correct him on it. Like I don't want him to be seen as like me. Like I don't have these views.
Yeah, sure.
You know what I mean? Like, Understood. But it's fun to play with that and have, again, contrast that with people from a more modern sensibility who can, because he's not from our century, he can point out, we can play with things that we kind of take for granted, or that we can show why they're important. Just because 100 years ago, we didn't, you know, talk about equality for women or minorities or whatever. So we can kind of play that up a little bit. But again, I don't want to get too preachy, but it could be fun to have that kind of bit of dialogue here and there.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, that's another thing I wanted to discuss too, because you do sort of have, I don't know if it's called a subplot or B story or background sort of thing going on with the mayor character who runs the city and
yes.
sort of like identifies these creatures, because that's part of the background of your city, right? Like that there's some
yes.
something happened and there's all these supernatural monster characters like living in the society. I can't remember. Was it the whole world or just the city?
No, it's just the city.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
About the same time that Bix became a mummy, Harbor City became kind of this magnet for the supernatural and the otherworldly.
Yeah.
And we're not going to quite show what happened in this story, but we're going to allude to it a little bit.
Gotcha.
So, because that actually is a bigger reveal for another story. But they're definitely linked. So it's kind of like, you know how in Batman they always make the storyline where the quote unquote freaks or villains didn't show up until Batman did.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's a little along those lines, in that there was a correlation between when Bix became a mummy and when the supernatural kind of citizens started showing up in there. But there's a reason for both of them happening at the same time.
Yeah.
So it's not, Bix wasn't the cause in the way that Batman kind of escalated things in Gotham. So
sure.
Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it absolutely makes sense. But I mean, what I was going to say is, you know, there's a bit of a thing here where the mayor is calling these people out as others.
And oh, yes.
Very sort of relevant to kind of like what's happening today with the supernatural, you know, mummies, vampires, whatever, sort of standing in for whatever the target du jour sends to be. Unfortunately,
yes.
Today, it's whatever immigrants or trans people
yep.
or gay
yep.
people. Yeah. So, I mean, there's a yep. little bit of, it's not preachy at all, but it's like, if you're reading it and you're like, you're living in the world that we're living in right now, you know, I got it. I was like, oh, very cool. Well done.
Oh, good. Thank you. Yeah. One of the favorite things, you know, when I was a kid and I discovered the X-Men, right? I don't know.
Yeah.
I was reading in the Claremont John Romita Jr. era was my first, you know, experience
uh-huh.
with the X-Men.
Yeah, me too.
And with the Morlocks and all the underground, people literally living in the underground. And it was like, well, these people are like the downtrodden and the pushed aside. And,
yeah.
And it was just like, I had never seen that in a comic before. You certainly didn't see it in Spider-Man, Batman, or Superman.
Yeah.
And so I always loved that notion of the mutants being a stand-in for, you know, like you said, pick your marginalized population here. So I, once I saw the opportunity here, I wanted to play that up as well.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, it's great. I mean, it's really well done. I mean, everything really works really well in this issue. And I mean, you know, at one point there's kind of like a cult, like the dialogue, everything really works for the sort of thing that you're trying to do. Like I really feel that you've nailed it on the head with this, because I got it immediately. And
okay.
It fed the part of my brain that really loves this sort of stuff, which seems to be the same sort of things that you enjoy too, which is like, again, old movies, horror,
yeah.
like that sort of thing, but horror, not necessarily like in an overly, I mean, I like that stuff too, but like gory way or,
yeah.
you know, it's fun horror.
That's right. Yeah. I like to call it like, it's got a horror flavor. Like
you
just dipped a horror tea bag in it.
Horror
a little bit
adjacent.
To,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, it's got horror elements, but it's definitely not, it's not super bloody. You know, it's not a slasher movie. It doesn't have jump scares or any of that kind of thing. It's not super creepy. It's like you said before, it's not quite Scooby-Doo, but it's on, I see it as kind of like Batman, the animated series, meets Hellboy, is
sure.
the way I kind of describe it.
Yeah.
You know, so it's got, you know, supernatural cases that he's working. But the tone is lighter.
Yeah, yeah. I absolutely love Hellboy. I actually just started rereading, going back and rereading a lot of the old Hellboy stuff, and love Mike Mignola. And
oh yeah,
I know a lot of people hate that last movie that came out, but for me, I was just like, I was like, wow, this came as close to the, I mean, Guillermo del Toro's a genius. I'm not gonna, but I was like, there's a lot of comic stuff in this movie. Like, I was just like, how did everyone miss that? But yeah, I you're totally right. I mean, Batman, the animated series is one of the things I thought of when I saw the artwork. Was that a look that you were hopefully going for when you were looking for your artist?
It was, it was definitely. Yeah.
Bruce Timm, I mean, that's right.
100%. And Glenn Murakami and all that whole team. Right. Yeah. So Gonzalo Martinez is a professional cartoonist. He lives in Chile. And I got hooked up with him through Geraldo Borges, who is currently the penciler on Thunderbolts, but he was working on, I think, Nightwing at the time.
Okay.
He and his partner, Claudio Alvarez, run a studio, like an artist studio, basically, in South America. They both live in Brazil, and they represent about 20 or so artists who work in South America. And so Geraldo hooked me up with Gonzalo, and, you know, their portfolios are online, so I could get a sense of, you know, what his style was. But I didn't quite, you never know until you start working with somebody exactly how it's all going to come together. And Gonzalo is fantastic. Like, not only is he a great storyteller, he does good with acting, which not everybody does. He used to be an architect before he became a cartoonist. And so he's very good with space, which I started off as an illustrator, and I suck
at, building, me too.
At buildings and perspective and architecture. And he just does it flawlessly. Like, he does it. You always have a sense, at least I think so, of the space that they're in. Even on the page, he does that old school Jim Shooter thing, which is one panel on the page has to be an establishing shot, right? Okay. So, like, I'm looking at page, I should have put numbers on these pages, but it's the flashback where Bix breaks up the cult. And so there's a close up of him breaking down the door, and then a close up of him punching a guy. But then there's a wide shot, so you get a sense of how many people are in this place and what objects are in this place. And then we cut back into a close up of him tackling a guy. So it just, his storytelling is really on point, I think.
Yeah.
And then Arthur Hesley, who's the colorist.
I just wanted to ask about that because the colors are great.
Arthur, I had never heard of before, and he also lives in South America, and he's now working with Geraldo, who I mentioned a minute ago, on Thunderbolts for Marvel.
Nice.
He is fantastic. I asked him to give me, like, Greg Smallwood. I wanted that kind of feel on it, like from Human Target or some of the other work. So you can see there's a lot of right angles in his color, a lot of that kind of harsh shadows, and he also has some odd kind of sponge work for the texture, which is not at all anything that I asked for, other than I showed him a couple things that I liked and I said, you know, see what you can do. And he came up with this style kind of on his own, and it looks, I think, fantastic.
Yeah, it looks great. I mean, that's the thing, right? Is that it very much is reminiscent of that sort of, like, you know, Bruce Timm, Alex Toth sort of thing, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah,
the colors, he does something different with the colors where it's just like, it's not just flat stuff. There's the Batman Adventures books, which are beautifully colored and illustrated and everything.
Of course, yeah,
and all that stuff. But this adds kind of like another level. And the color palette is so what you associate with kind of like Halloween, not oranges, but, you know, violets and reds and stuff like that. It really is. I mean, the whole package is some greens in there. Really beautiful looking book.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I could not be happier with the collaboration that the creative team has had with me. We worked together very well on the first book, so I was really pleased and very excited that they were available to work with me on moving forward on this issue.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about Zombie Town, because
because
I really enjoyed that as well, and the artwork I really enjoyed as well in a different way, because as someone who, like, I'm an artist as well. I'm not a professional comic artist. I work on my own stuff, and, you know, I do conventions a little bit here and there. But, you know, it's called part-time fanboy people. In any case, the point being that the things that I'm always fascinated about, like I love Paul Pope, right? Because yeah. in the era that probably you and I grew up in, like there was a Marvel style, right? That yeah. you were always, or DC style that you were trying to emulate. And it was so like clean and crisp and everything was within the lines. And you know what I mean? Yeah. Every once in a yeah. while you would get like a Bill Sienkiewicz and I just wouldn't know what to do with it. I'd be like, this doesn't process for me. I can't, you know, it wasn't that I didn't like it, but I was just like, no, John Byrne, George yeah. Perez, you know, or yeah, Jose totally. Luis Garcia. So when I come across artwork like this, I'm like, I don't know what to do with it, but I love it so much. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like there's a 100%. Part of me that wishes I could let go in my own art as much as somebody like Paul Pope or the artist that does, yeah. you know, Zombie Town does yeah. so well.
His name is Gonzalo Ruggieri. Uh-huh. He lives in, where does he live? He's also in South America. I just can't
sure.
remember which country.
It's not important. No, his name is
really
much more important.
It bothers yeah. me that I can't remember.
Sure, sure.
If Gonzalo, if you're listening, I apologize. But yeah, I found him. I had actually backed a book that he did on Kickstarter. He did a sketchbook on Kickstarter last year.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. And so I bought his because I really liked his style. And then I realized that I actually own a couple of comics that he did.
He worked on
The Rumble comic for Image with John Arcudi.
Okay.
And he did an issue or two of that a few years ago that I didn't even realize I have in my collection.
Sure.
And then he does a lot of work overseas as well. Like you can tell looking at his stuff, it's a very kind of European style, right? Okay. So it feels more like, I don't know, are you familiar with like the Black Sod books?
Yeah.
So it's a little rougher than that. But it has that kind of fluidity yeah. to it. It's very different from Gonzalo Martinez's main Bixby Grant story, but that's kind of what I was going for. I wanted yeah. something a little different to show that Harbor City can encompass more than just one kind of style and one kind of tone, right?
Sure.
So what I love about this is it feels like a more traditional illustration style. And like you said, like he can exaggerate and let things go, and he really lets... Like, I don't, did you go to art school?
No, I did not. I mean, I've taken like life drawing classes and so I'm very much self-taught.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So in art school, we were taught the 7 rules of Gestalt.
Okay.
And one of them is like closure. And one of them is all these things that the tricks of your eye creates. So if you don't draw the full line, your brain does anyways, as a viewer, you know what I mean? So like yeah. he leaves a lot of things out, but it's still, you could still, fill that in. So I'm looking at the first page here, and then the squad room at the precinct. Like he doesn't draw all the lines on the windows,
yeah,
or even the bottom of the desk around Mari as she walks through the room,
yeah.
But you get it. Like he also, like he did everything. Like so he penciled,
did he do the colors too?
He did the colors as well.
Oh and yeah, so, all works
like
so well.
He's got it. And it's brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah.
So he was quite a find, and I'm looking forward to him. He's going to be doing, you know, obviously 6 parts of this. But like I said earlier, this was an excuse basically just to work zombies in, because everybody loves zombies. I like zombies. You like zombies.
I love zombies. You don't even know how much I love zombies, but I don't like bad like zombie stuff, but I love good. When the zombie thing is good, I'm just like, but I mean the artwork in this chapter, I mean, it yeah. fits the zombie thing, right? Because I don't want to disparage the artist in any way, but you know, the zombies are shambling and falling apart and stuff like this.
Yes.
And this works. Like it like, and I always, and maybe it's just me because of my bent, but like zombies are creepier to me, right? Like they're just right. gross and they're falling yeah. apart. And you yeah. know, for me, again, I mentioned earlier that, you know, my father passed away when I was younger. So like, and I remember reading The Monkey's Paw when I was a kid, and I was, you know, the wish that you always had as a kid is that your parent would come back. And then yeah. I read The Monkey's Paw and I was like, oh fuck no. Like it right. was just right. like, oh my right. God. So like the whole zombie thing freaks me out on just a lot of levels, but reading sure. this chapter, like it just works beautifully for it, because you've got like the PI noir thing, and noir tends to be, even in the movies, right? It's a bit, you know, you've got the clouds and the mist and things like that, but it tends to be crisper and cleaner and stuff like that, like with the shadows and stuff. And when you get to like Romero stuff, like not everything like looks like, you know, zombie stuff, not everything looks like really well put together, but it works for the atmosphere. And that's what works with this for me anyway. I flipped the page and I was like, oh wow, the art is a hard swerve, but it works. Like I was like, really good.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. You know, obviously, all the credit belongs to Gonzalo on that. Yeah. But,
well, you write a good story too, because there's good elements in this, like the zombie sort of fight club, like rooster cock fighting thing in there, which I hope I didn't spoil anything. Like, that's fantastic.
No, not at all.
I've never thought about that. Has anyone ever done that?
I don't know. Maybe in The Walking Dead, maybe.
Okay. Okay. I might have missed it. Yeah.
I didn't read the comics. I watched most of the series.
Oh, but really?
I don't remember that. It could also just have, I could be stuck in my subconscious from somewhere I picked it up.
Sure.
The fun part was my editor, Heather Antos, shout out to Heather, is she's like, how are they not just going after the people? And I was like, oh, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Well, let's put a dome over them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they're basically in like, remember the old Pop-O-Matic
games? Yeah, 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 yeah. I remember that.
They're basically in one of those. And then we just, they paint a giant letter on the back of them and, you know, they fight. And I thought that was a lot of fun.
It's great. I mean, everything in this chapter was like, you know, just really, I as a fan of the subgenre, I guess, of like zombies, I very much was like, this is great. Like as soon as I turned the page. And again, that's the thing with me, right? Is like one of the things that, at least in my world, like when I draw, I have shaky hands. So like for me, it's like, I'm always trying to get that like perfect line. And I just admire people like this who they're, you know, it's painterly, right? And that's a thing that I've never had the patience for either. My daughter is in art, has been taking art classes since she was a kid, which is not necessarily a luxury I had growing up. And so she is a painter and she loves painting and she's just like, oh, it relaxes me. And I'm like, oh my God, like painting doesn't relax. It just freaks me out. All I see is like what goes wrong. And again, there's nothing wrong with this art. I'm not just, but you understand what I mean, right? And I hope the artist, 100%. If he's listening, understands what I'm talking about because I love this. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I think that's the entire appeal of Gonzalo's work is the looseness of it. It does feel like it has a Kyle Baker vibe or Sienkiewicz. It's not nearly as loose as Sienkiewicz.
Yeah.
But it is, it's somewhere in between a more traditional artist than Sienkiewicz in that it is very sketchy. And I mean, the man can draw. He's not hiding a lack of talent in style, which some people do.
Yeah.
You can tell like on that last page when she's at the gate, like he, knows how to draw trees and he knows how to draw a fence. Like, and I know that sounds stupid.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that to make the environment believable, like he pulls it off, right?
Yeah.
Like it's super sketchy and very stylized, but also kind of believable. It feels more like a style you'd probably find in a storybook or a children's book. Not tonally, but stylistically.
Yeah. 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 Absolutely.
I'm very inky and very brushy.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just so fascinated by people that work like this. And I love it so much because to me, it's like, maybe it's something I tried to work with brushes a long time ago and I did okay. Like it looked sloppy, but when I looked at it, I was like, oh, later on, it is one of the Halloween illustrations that I keep sharing over and over the years. But like this, I was just like, oh, this is perfect. This fits the tone. But we should talk about the story too, because you're the writer.
Sure.
You wrote the, so let's talk about like what's going on in Zombie Town, because I very much like, it just hit me in the right spot.
Well, I'm sure it did, given your history with your father. So, Detective Ramirez, her father disappeared when she was a little girl.
Yeah.
He was a police captain, like one of the most decorated police on the force in Harbor City, and he disappeared, and nobody knows what happened to him. They assume he's assumed dead at this point, but no one's sure. So, we imply here that Mari has been, Detective Ramirez has been doing some kind of side investigating off the books to try and figure out what happened to her dad. But the trail kind of went cold a number of years ago. So she finally, this story kicks off with her. She's got a fresh lead. She hasn't had any leads in 5-6 years or so. So she's going to head off to find this guy who was the last person to see her father alive. And so this is basically the first part of the first act of this story where she does go to that zombie fight club to find her source and try to get more information about her father.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's just a really sort of like great take on everything. I love the idea of, you know, a city sort of being like cordoned off and just being like, okay, that's just going to be over there. Like nobody go over there, leave it alone. Hopefully we can just contain it and stuff like that. And, you know, and then the idea of people sort of illicitly using zombies for, you know, gambling and stuff like that. Like, it's just so, it's very clever. And I was just like, oh, I like horror. I have not seen everything, you know, but to me, it just seemed like a very unique and original take. And I was just like, this is great. Like it put a smile on my face.
Oh, thanks. That's really nice to hear.
Yeah.
I'm going to extrapolate on that even more in the next issue. So,
oh, cool.
Within Zombie Town is Il Cosa Morta, which is a take on Il Cosa Nostra, which was the Italian name for the mob, right?
Yeah.
Which it literally means our thing, our special. Is it our special thing or just our thing?
It's our cosa. Well, Italian, I speak Spanish. So our cosa is our thing. But it, it's probably
Nostra.
Like
I think
that.
It means our. So, anyways, this one is called Il Cosa Muerte, which means our dead thing or the dead thing. So there is a zombie mob or mafia in
Harbor
City. How does
that work? That's so great.
So in the next issue, we're gonna set up the rules for zombies in this world. So, there are two levels of zombies. When there was an outbreak 30 years ago, they discovered that the head of the mafia, the Don at the time, was more or less immune to the zombie virus. He kept his intelligence, but his body started to decay. So he was like, so there's two levels. There's like intelligent zombies, and then there's your more traditional, like, you know, can't see, just react to sound and vibration zombies, like just kind of the ones who will just stand there until something gets their attention or they smell a human or something.
Yeah.
So she's going to go into, Mari is going to head into Zombie Town. She's really looking for the old headquarters of Il Cosa Morta.
Okay. Nice.
And so, she's going to see if her father had any connection with them. Was he, you know, what happened there? So we'll get into that. And we'll dig up, you know, her doubts about her father. Like, was he all that he was cracked up to be? Was he as celebrated and as good as everyone says he was? I mean, he's the reason she became a cop. So is that all baloney? So, you know, it'll get into her her basic beliefs, you know, into good and bad.
Yeah. Well, we've all got father issues, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Great.
Yeah,
everybody does. Yeah.
No, it's a great, I mean, the whole thing is just like a great package. I mean, one of the things that, you know, I'm very curious about are your influences. Like it sounds like you and I may have grown up in the same kind of like era. Are generally maybe around the same age, but like, how did you get into horror? How did you get into noir? Like, what are the things that like you? Did you grow up on the East Coast?
I did. I grew up in Connecticut.
I'm like Jersey, New York. So
Okay, there you go.
Yeah,
I did. I lived in New York for a few years, but that was after college.
Gotcha.
And I currently live in Massachusetts. So I grew up. I grew up in Hartford, Connecticut area and, you know, pretty suburban existence, pretty banal. And then of course, Star Wars came along and, Raiders of the Lost Ark, was my favorite movie of all time.
Okay.
And so that got me into like, to be more curious about the 1940s and the 1930s. Right. Cause at that, when I was a kid, I didn't know anything about the old serials or why everybody used to wear a hat or
you know
what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it was just like another time that seemed more innocent and more interesting than what was going on in the late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah.
And so that's how I kind of got interested in, you know, old movies and detective stuff is just mostly because of the visual trappings of it.
Yeah.
And then in college, I really got into noir because of The Third Man.
Cool.
The Orson Welles, which is a gorgeous movie, like absolutely knocked down beautiful.
Yeah.
And then just post-war noir, Philip Marlowe, all the different novels. I started reading all that stuff and just was captivated by it. There, it had its own kind of pace and its own kind of, lingo that didn't exist anywhere else. It, you know, over time, it's become almost like a caricature of itself, which I try very carefully not to get caught up in that.
Sure.
I want to give Bix some PI cred, but I also don't want him to sound like a cartoon character.
Sure. Sure.
You know, he doesn't want to, it's not satire of a PI.
Yeah.
My biggest influences, Spielberg movies, John Carpenter movies. In fact, I just rewatched The Thing last night, which is one of my top five movies of all time for sure. It's weird. Like, I never thought of myself as a horror guy, but I am.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I would never say something, oh yeah, horror is one of my favorite genres, but it totally is. Like,
yeah.
And in the last 10 years, this kind of resurgence of the new horror stuff, like Midsommar and
The
Witch and The Lighthouse and just so much Hereditary and all this kind of new stuff. Has just kind of rekindled my interest in horror. I'm not a huge slasher person, but I do enjoy it as kind of campy good fun, right? Like,
sure.
I love all the Friday the 13th movies and the let's see, that's Jason. Who's the other guy? Halloween.
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 We're in the season right now.
Yes, I know.
Yeah.
So I mean, all that kind of stuff. I don't know. Are you familiar with Kirby Ferguson? He's a filmmaker who did a series called Everything is a Remix.
No.
Which it's a great series. If anybody hasn't seen it, I would really encourage you to.
A TV show or?
It's available on YouTube. So if you look up Everything is a Remix, it shows how, you know, Star Wars was a regurgitation of everything that George Lucas had grown up with.
Gotcha.
But it was remixed in a way that made it new and interesting.
Sure.
And how rap music was a remix of everything that had come before that in soul and funk and sort of an oral tradition.
Oh,
and
he goes through
it's awesome. So like I definitely feel like my work is, you know, a chopping up of all the things that I've absorbed over the years. So
sure.
there's monsters in there, there's some action, there's some PI, there's some a little bit of humor. There's like, you know, there's some, the lighter tone is definitely from Batman, the animated series, which I didn't watch until I was in college, because that's when it came out, but
I still like
the tone of it. And I also love the fact that it's retro, but they also had cell phones. You know what I mean?
Like,
it was like this out of time throwback feel, which is kind of what I'm going for in this as well. Most people like yourself, you know, mentioned that, you know, Diego's a rockabilly and Bix is of course a throwback to PI. He still wears a fedora and a tie and he's got the dueling 45s, and that's all intentional. And he drives old cars because he has old cars.
Yeah.
he the last car he bought was probably in the 60s.
But
he
great.
And his I don't think you've met him in this issue yet, but his driver, his name is Muscles Marinara. He's a mechanic and also a driver because Bix never knows if he's going to lose his limbs and wouldn't be able to drive home.
My God, that's great.
So he's got a guy who drives him around and also maintains all of his old cars. And that's just really an excuse so that I can pick any old car I want to put in the story. So like in the first one, it was a 57 Chevy, and the new one, it's a 67 Charger. And you know, who in the next one, it'll probably be a 66 Corvette or something, like whatever I feel like putting in there as a classic car, because I think that's fun. So again, it's just like a mashup of all this different stuff from over the years. Of course, I grew up on the Aliens and Alien, which are two great, very different movies. One is straight up horror, one is action horror.
Yeah.
Like, you know, probably whatever you're thinking of that you grew up with is probably somewhere in the back of my head as well.
Yeah, I think that we grew up on similar tastes, especially there's always that kind of like East Coast vibe too, where it's like, because I mean, like I was just talking about it on another interview where it's like, WPIX, like Channel 11
and
Tri-State. Yeah, I mean, they just showed, or Channel 9, and you know, they would show all that stuff, and you would just be like home on a Saturday afternoon or whatever. And Latchkey Kid or whatever. Yep.
Creature Double Feature.
Yeah. So all that stuff.
PIX, like, would show all the Godzilla movies and all the.
Star Trek at 11 o'clock at night and Twilight Zone.
Absolutely.
All that stuff. Loved all that stuff. Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
And G.I. Joe, Transformers. G.I. Joe. He-Man, Thundercats, all of it.
Yeah.
It's all packed away there in my
If you like G.I. Joe, there's a guy that has come on. We are doing the horror movie podcast, but we're recording them early. We record them early, so they're just sitting around. They're not going to make October because the strike is not over. But Joe Slepsky, he does a podcast called Joe on Joe, which is a G.I. Joe podcast. And if you ever get a chance, you should. And if you're a G.I. Joe fan, you should listen to it because it's great. They watch an episode and then they dissect it at the end of it. And he's done some other clever stuff. So I would definitely check that out. But that's great. I mean, I don't want to keep you on for too much longer because we're approaching an hour and stuff. And I know you're busy and you're on the East Coast, so it's afternoon for you at this point.
No worries.
But how'd you get into comics? I mean, it sounds like you were a publisher or are a publisher. What is Comic Works?
Comic Works, I started back in 1999.
Oh, wow.
With my friend Shannon Denton, who is a lifelong comics and animation professional.
Okay.
So I hooked up with him. He's lived out in LA forever, but I picked up a comic of his back in 99 that he put out through Antarctic Press. And I ended up emailing him. This is when you could just email anybody and they would probably get back to you. And we struck up a friendship and I helped him out with his website. And then we decided that we were going to start an online publishing company because that seemed like the thing to do. And it costs zero money to publish things online, a little server space, but it doesn't cost anything for distribution. Right. There's no printing involved. So, and he knows everybody. We used to do, when I was with Comic Works, we used to do San Diego every year. And I did it for like 10 years straight, and you could not walk with Shannon more than 5 feet without him running into somebody that knew him and wanted to talk to him for half an hour. So I would always just say, all right, I'll see you later. I mean, I got to meet a lot of great people that way. I met the Simonsons that way. Bernie Wrightson that way. I met Stan Lee. I met so many other great professionals. I got to meet Darwin Cook. I got to meet just a ton of people because Shannon is super connected and knows everybody. Yeah. He was able to pull in a whole bunch of people to post weekly comics on the site. And then we started doing anthologies. We worked with Keith Giffen, who just passed away this week. We worked with Dwayne McDuffie, who's also no longer with us. But we worked with just a whole bunch of great professionals who did like these little cool little fun stories that were like 10 pages long and black and white. And we'd throw them in our, 200 page anthology and put one out every year. And so we did that for a long time, 9-10 years, I think. And then we started doing illustrated novels, prose novels. And we worked with another great bunch of people, Tom Mandrake. I don't know if you're familiar with him.
Yeah. Of course.
He's worked for DC for a long time. Dan Mishkin, who's the co-creator of Blue Devil.
I just went on a Blue Devil kit. I drew a Blue Devil thing on my Instagram. Like, I don't know what just popped up. Like, Blue Devil was the best. I love
Blue Devil's awesome.
Yeah.
Blue Devil is fantastic.
Paris Cullings is the man as far as I'm concerned.
Great.
Yeah, yeah.
So good.
Yeah,
especially
for
that time, his style was so different than everybody else's.
Yeah,
he really,
so good.
Really stood out on the shelf.
Yeah, yeah.
But my point being that we just got to work with all these great people, and I got to be kind of, living my dream of rubbing elbows with professionals whose work I had been reading since I was a kid. But then, unfortunately, I had to put that aside because I got married, I had a kid.
It happens.
It happens. I mean, I shouldn't say unfortunately. I meant unfortunately.
Like I was going to say, your spouse is not going to like that.
Yeah. If you're listening, honey, you know I love you. She's really the reason that I'm even able to still do this. Is she's very encouraging.
Yeah.
Loves the fact that I love comics. She was an English major and was a writer before she went to back to school and became a doctor. So she appreciates the creative process. And I, in fact, knew that she was the one when we were sitting, we were first dating, and I was reading Wolverine Origin. Do you remember when that came out?
Yeah.
And she's like, "What's Wolverine's deal?" Yeah. And I was like, "What do you mean?" She's like, "Well, what's his story?" I'm like, "You really want to know?"
Uh-huh.
And she's like, "Yeah." And so I was like, "Okay, well, he was born in Canada." And I'm like, "Wait, you really want me to get into this?" And she's like, "Yeah, tell me." So I told her the whole story, and I'd stop like every 30 seconds and just check that, you know, she wasn't just humoring me.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, "Okay, I think I can truck with this lady." And you know, about a year later, we moved in together. So it's worked out over the long haul. But
congratulations. It's always great to find the good one that will watch the zombie movie, you know, put up with stuff. Like right now it's October, right? So my wife is like, "Okay, you've got your 31 days. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, and then, you know, but come Christmas, no horror movies." And I'm just like, okay. Yeah, but what about Krampus? You know, and stuff
like
that. I know,
come on, Krampus.
Yeah. I know.
You know, we have very similar sensibilities. She grew up, her brother and her brother's best friend were huge Aliens fans, and they would, you know, they grew up in what I call 80s HBO culture.
You just
watch the same movies over and over and over again. Because that was what was on. We didn't have on demand, we didn't have a TiVo, you know, you had to watch what was playing right now. And for a month they would play Aliens, and so we would watch it over and over. So we had, you know, a very similar frame of reference from our childhoods, and she watched The Thing with me last night and absolutely loves that movie. So you know, I knew from very early on that we were gonna mesh pretty well.
Have you seen, I don't know why this keeps coming up in my head, but have you seen Renfield yet?
Yes.
Yeah. I just watched it this week with my wife, and we were watching it, and at one point she goes, "This is actually kind of brilliant." And I was like, I don't know why that sounded like something that you might like, but like, yeah.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun. If you like What We Do in Shadows,
yeah,
I think Renfield is a really good kind of the same ilk.
It was really fun. And as far as I'm concerned, I said it on Facebook, but Nicolas Cage is a national treasure. Like the stuff that he does in that role, I was 100%. Just like, when he's on, like, it's so great to watch.
Absolutely.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, but we're not talking about Renfield, we're talking about Bigsby Grant, Private Eye, Fangs, and Brimstone. You know, Patrick, it's been such a pleasure chatting with you, and I appreciate you taking the time, you know, sitting with me on this podcast.
Oh, this has been great. I could sit here and chat with you all day, but thank you so much for having me on.
Same here. And you are welcome back, like, anytime. Any sort of like final thoughts or?
No, I hope everyone will check it out.
You should.
It is, like you said, it's the spooky season, so it's time for ghosts and ghouls and monsters. So head over to Kickstarter, type in Bigsby Grant or Patrick Coyle, Coyle, and check it out.
Again, I very much enjoyed this. I thought it was great. I mean, it was right up my alley. You know, sometimes you never know what you're going to get. And I was just like, this is great. Like, perfect. It hit that, you know, Bruce Timm, Batman, the animated series. It hit the George Romero zombie thing. Like I was like all in as soon as I started reading it. So, you know, I appreciate, you know, you making it. I appreciate everyone who's involved, and everyone should go support it on Kickstarter. Bigsby Grant. So great. I'm just going to go with Bill Bigsby as being I'm just going to keep that in my brain. But where can people find you online? Like your stuff?
Oh, sure. You can go to rnmpress.com.
Okay.
Is the publishing company. It's me, but it's my publishing company for Bigsby Grant and any future projects. You can find me on Facebook at Patrick Makes Comics.
Okay.
And I am on Threads. Patrick M. Coyle, for anybody who's over there.
For Threads. Okay.
Yeah. I did.
What was it again? Patrick M. Coyle?
Correct. Patrick M. as in Michael Coyle. I am also on, what's the other one? Blue Sky, if anybody's on Blue Sky.
Wow, you're all over it. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I'm trying
to get away from the social media.
I know, but it's how I've built my audience so far. Believe me, I would love to be off social media. I am still on Twitter. I refuse to call it X.
I call it Twix.
I like that.
Twix. Yeah.
I like that quite a bit.
Yeah.
Just, you know, search for me on any of those platforms. Nice. I am also, Yeah, if you go to RMN Press, you can sign up for my newsletter. I give away a hardcover edition of the first Bixby Grant graphic novel every month.
Oh, wow.
It's exclusive only to newsletter subscribers. You cannot buy it.
I'm going to sign up.
Pick it up anywhere else. So, yeah, you can do that.
That's awesome. And will the first graphic novel be available in this Kickstarter? Like, is it an add-on or anything like that? Or
yes, it will. There'll be a catch-up tier, or you can buy one of the covers. Because we have three different covers, and then you can add it on the original graphic novel as well.
Excellent, excellent. Well, Patrick Coyle, I think that you are the man. I think Bixby Grant is awesome. Bixby Grant, Private Eye, Fangs and Brimstone on Kickstarter. By the time this interview goes up, the campaign will hopefully already have been funded, but still throw it money. I really, really enjoyed it. And I'm telling you, I'm not blowing smoke up your butt. I enjoyed it. So thank you so much, Patrick Coyle.
Thank you, Christian. I appreciate your time.
Absolutely. My name is Christian Horn. This has been another episode of the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. You can check us out on parttimefanboy.com. Our email is ptf@parttimefanboy.com. We are still on Facebook. We are still on Instagram. We have abandoned the hellscape that is Twix. I don't know when I'm going to sign up for the... I'm going to get dragged in. I know somehow, but I'm trying to avoid it. In any case, thank you for listening. Go check out Bixby Grant on Kickstarter.com right now and throw it some money, because I'm telling you, it is worth it. I loved it. And, you know, it's perfect for this season. Thanks for listening. And we will be back soon with another episode. Bye.
Part-time fanboy. Part-time. Part-time fanboy.